The views expressed on the following podcasts are not the opinions of our employers, staff, friends, family, or the bots we programmed to write this show.
Especially the robots. We want nothing to do with this.
Enjoy the show. So, for today, I think we have a good change of pace from more serious topics to something a bit more fun.
Ooh, goody.
Yeah, a real classic, a whopper of a movie.
Excellent. What is it? What is it? Do tell.
Of course, I'm talking about Hackers.
Oh, great choice. Seriously. To any fans that we still have after our long hiatus, if you haven't seen it, take your loser butt right now and watch it before listening to this episode.
It's a classic. And with that, and without further ado, on this episode, we discuss the role of hackers in data science, the early internet, and some really hacky plot lines. All this and more on today's episode of
Kill All Humans.
Welcome to Kill All Humans, Data in Pop Culture. On this show, two data professional nerds seek out data in pop culture wherever we can find it. TV, movies, games, etc. And see what parallels we can draw to what's happening out there in the real world.
And at the end, we rate what we've watched for realism using our patent-pending, hack-together-with-duct-tape Turing score system.
My name is Tim, and I'm a data manager and a technology enthusiast.
And I'm Matthew, and I'm still a data scientist at a Luddite, assuming, of course, I'm not an Android.
And, of course, welcome back to Season 2 of Kill All Humans. Super exciting here. Okay, so let's get into it. Hackers. So, the movie opens with an 11-year-old hacker on trial for crashing the internet, or at least a good chunk of it. The movie then skips that same hacker in high school where he lands with a group of hacker friends who stumble onto a corporate embezzlement scheme. The FBI are brought in and the friends are investigated for their involvement in that scheme, which now is made to look like ransomware. Ultimately, after some hacking, the friends are exonerated and the guilty parties are arrested. On an airplane, nonetheless. Spoiler alert. Oh yeah, spoiler alert. So, obviously, there's a lot to unpack in this movie. The plot lines aren't, like, super complex. I mean, really, the storyline, you have the classic underdog story, you have a love story, you've got, you know, like, the hope and idealists of the young hackers, early mid-90s.
This story defined a whole genre, though. I mean, that's the thing. The whole idea of white hats and black hats. This was really popularized here. While the world may have been characterized by William Gibson, hackers really bought the hacker stereotype to life.
They really kind of hit you over the head with it quite a bit with like, you know, hackers dress a certain way, have their own subculture. And a lot of those elements were like really, really well done and really true throughout this entire film. I mean, I didn't grow up in New York City in the mid 90s with a massive hacker culture or anything like that. But, you know, it's almost like somebody who all my friends and all the nerds, that's who they wanted to be. They wanted to be those cool guys, that cool clothing and the, I don't think we ever really use the language. I don't think I'm elite, Matthew. Yeah, if you're elite,
so this is one of the first movies to come out, and there were a few in the 80s, but one of the first to really make nerds look cool.
Yeah,
and the whole idea that there could be a nerd culture, even though they were still getting beat up in other movies and like beat up pretty badly. You know, now you start having this cultural lines where, oh, that nerd is going somewhere. He's going to be a system administrator at a huge network thing. Maybe he won't be quite such a dork then, and you might actually consider going out with him on a date.
And this is actually interesting because this is one of the first movies that I recall, and I could be wrong, but you actually see the antagonist of the film. I'm trying to remember the character's name, but the antagonist of the film, he was a quote-unquote hacker nerd who had a high-level corporate position at the Ellingson Mineral Company. I think it was called Ellingson Mineral. So, I mean, he had the high-level position. So you're actually starting to see not only the hackers kind of in their own little enclave, but you see them start to break through into the corporate world, which, you know, I think in 2023 does resonate quite a bit with not only members of our audience, but if we think about our profession, think about kind of the nerd culture we grew up in, and now a lot of us kind of live in the corporate bubble.
Well, this was a real breakthrough because, like, yeah, exactly as you're talking about, here was a nerd who had broken through, had achieved a position of at least reasonable prominence within an organization where he would actually speak to the executives. And now there are thousands of us, tens of thousands. We have whole departments. We have whole divisions of companies that are entirely stacked by these kinds of nerds. And this movie really was the first to just say, hey, this is going to happen. It's real.
So let's talk. So speaking of real, let's talk a little bit about like hacking accuracy. Now, just a quick note, not a hacker, not a script kiddie, not a phone freaker, not those things. I mean, being data people, we are adjacent to it, at least have some sort of knowledge of it. But there are a few elements of this movie that I think, I mean, obviously there's a lot of fantasy involved. I mean, especially in scenes of, I'm just looking at their BIOS boot up screens where they got these nice little graphics that come up, acid burn and that sort of thing. Like, who would take the time to do that? So that's one. But also, like, just like the virus, the Da Vinci virus, someone bothered programming a voice and just like all that sort of stuff that's fantasy elements. But there's some really interesting kernels in there that are true even today. And the one big thing is social engineering hacking. That right. featured very prominently in this film, where somebody calls, finds the weakest link, and uses that to break into a system. So we see
the weakest link is always human.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean,
that's absolutely right. Because like you can mathematically algorithmize any level of encryption you want today in any degree of flexibility. And from a mathematical standpoint, every system is going to be impossible to hack, except for the humans.
Yeah. And you think about it this way. I mean, if human beings weren't subject to social engineering in the way it's shown in the film, so for example, calling the security guard and getting the address on the modem, actually breaking into the facility, like we wouldn't need things like firewalls. Heck, we wouldn't even need corporate training on don't click these emails. Yet, how common are these phishing emails, these scam emails from a corporate world? You click, something gets loaded. Boom, they're into the system. You know, it's still common today. And, you know, hackers did a great job of showing how easy and still relevant social engineering is to hacking.
I mean, now you don't even hack the computer anymore. You hack the person. I mean, look at all of these fraudulent email scams and everything else. Like, we're going directly to the source and the weakest link. I mean, why hack a corporate database of credit cards when you can send a scam email to a person and get them just type it into you for you?
And now in this day and age, I mean, between generative AI, which is, you know, something that sort of happened while we were on hiatus, we're going to have to get into that in another episode.
That's going to be another episode. Yep.
But you could sample someone's voice,
right?
Actually get them to call somebody to get them to wire you money. You don't need to break into a bank account anymore. It's the human beings are the weakest element, and that's always going to be true in any system that we set up. And I just think I just love that hackers, kudos that they actually showed that they didn't do the typical, oh, I'm going to break into the system. Yeah, they did that towards the end. Okay. But they always had like some sort of social element to their hacks, which I say again, kudos to that.
Yeah. So, I mean, this movie really preludes a lot of very interesting trends in society. I mean, like the one part that wasn't social engineering, which you mentioned, like these denial of service attacks and using basically hacking as cyber warfare.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're engaging in a campaign, and that's very common today, actually. Like that's a whole, you know, they have a whole industry out there to do that now. It's not just, you know, the lone hacker going into one system. Now it's hundreds of them in coordinated virtual armies.
Yeah. And, you know, what's interesting, too, is that what they showed in this in the film is that they had like hackers from all over the world. They were using their best virus. But I'm just going to say, OK, you know, we'll call that a prelude to a DDoS attack. Right. But what I find interesting, too, is that you're right. It's a bit of a prelude to what actually happens today, which is, you have it on such a large scale. You don't have like, oh, it's probably someone in his mother's basement like they showed in the beginning of the film. Now you have state actors engaging in it, looking at you, Russia. Hey, if this doesn't get airplay in Russia, I don't know why we're doing this. But, but you know, like very famously, Russia, North Korea, mm-hmm. I'm sure we've got them on our end too, in the United States and Canada, wherever else people might be listening. There are teams and armies of hackers at a state level, corporate level, criminal level, they exist everywhere. It's no longer just like one person. I'm not sure it really was.
The thing to remember really does get back to the relevance to data science today, and we haven't talked about that, but it's really all about the information. In the 80s, with the rise of computers, we realized that corporations and the whole economy was going to start shifting, and that data was going to start having a core and central purpose to a corporation's identity. It needed to be protected. It needed to be curated. It needed to be analyzed. And the moment that it's like, they say invention is the mother of necessity, but in some ways it's actually kind of the reverse, that the moment this data exists, then it produces all kinds of needs that then have to be brought into the company. So those initial data tables, those initial emails, those are the things which spawn an entire generation of what's going to become the information and ultimately the data economy.
Yeah, and I think that does raise a very interesting point, that where you start seeing a lot of these corporate reliance on data and showing that as corporations and companies start relying on data, you definitely start seeing almost a generational gap between what the leadership understands about data and computer science and everything else, in data science, I should say, versus what the reality is on the ground. So you see it quite a bit in the movie, where the other antagonist, the head of public relations, like, cookies, rabbits, I don't know what's going on. And you get a lot of that, like, outside the data, outside the hacker culture, is like, I don't know what any of this means. That was a common stereotype, but I think that's starting to go away in the corporate culture a bit. Like, you can't get away with that now, but definitely back then, there was elements of it.
This is with it to that degree of level. But the problem is that as much as the executives understand, the technology and the changes and the complexity of the platforms is growing so quickly that gap never truly goes away. So obviously you're never going to see this instance where somebody is explaining to a major bank, oh, well, we're going to move your entire data architecture to a data lake and put it on one single database. And then an executive asks, oh, hey, well, why don't we just buy one license of Oracle? Why do we need to pay you $10 million to do this transfer? And, you know, that kind of level of ignorance isn't acceptable anymore. But it's painfully apparent with the complexities of the online cloud computing platforms that exist today that gap is still very, very real and very problematic.
So I think, again, like in the corporate world, though, rather than saying in terms of, I need to have that deep understanding of what migrating to a data lake means, or having to moving our infrastructure to cloud computing. Instead of that, it's about training people to discuss things about risk. What is the risk of doing it? What is the risk if we don't do it? And I think that's kind of the big takeaway, especially from the corporate world in this movie. So, for example, the risk of putting your ocean tanker fully in the hands of an AI, a 1990s AI, mind you, to the point where it could not be overridden if something bad happens. That is a great example of maybe we should at least understand risk at bare minimum.
And we now talk about absolutely everything about risk. Like, it's all about risk, and it's always through a risk lens. Like, it doesn't matter what kind of data project it is. It's the risk. Are we going to lose a customer? Are we going to mess up our website? Are we going to do this? And every project now, you have to talk about risk.
Absolutely.
Even if you don't even know the first thing about it. Everything has to be put into that language.
Yeah. And I think perhaps if the executives talked more about risk, they wouldn't have put Penn Jillette in charge of their IT infrastructure. That's right. He's in the film, a young Penn Jillette.
Very young Penn Jillette.
Not sure where Teller was. Maybe.
Yeah, no, I was wondering where Teller was. Was he like crawling around the Ethernet cube tubes? Or
I got to wonder how that conversation came about. Was there like, did some person in a I don't know, like in an executive meeting, some guy bursts in, great news, we got Penn Jillette. Oh, thank God, the show's a go. We can make this movie now. It seems like such a random thing.
Yeah, I never quite get over that. I every time I see him there, I'm like, what the fuck is he doing?
Why is Ben Gillette in this?
Why?
That's fine. Well, and Angelina Jolie's in it too. But I mean, it was early career.
Well, that no. Hold on, that totally makes sense. No. I mean, she is the nerd hottie of all time.
You have to have one. You have to have at least one. Yeah. Okay, let's talk about the cultural influence. So first of all, hackers as a film, I couldn't even call it a cult classic. I'm not sure it really did well at the box office either. I don't think it was so much as a influential film as it was, here's the culture sort of sprung from that culture. And it took a lot of the stereotypes of the culture, both positive and negative, because you had the positive stereotype that hackers wanted to see themselves as very good people. But the Secret Service or the FBI agent in the film was absolutely correct. Most hackers could be quite dangerous.
Oh, yeah. That's for sure. I think in that way, the movie is both cause and effect. In its essence, yeah, it is a milestone in the cultural moments to this new technology innovation sphere that we're seeing. But it's also like, I think it's just because they got it right. It just almost is like a mirror up to a movement that was just inevitable anyway, because it was already so entrenched. And it's interesting to talk now, because the new, like then it was nerd culture. Interestingly, now the new language is neurodiverse culture.
Really?
And that's really moving through corporations. Now the executives have no idea what to do with it, but or what it is or what it means. But it's definitely that is the new buzzword that it's going around. And it's really interesting to watch that evolution too.
So what do you mean by nerd-adverse culture? I'm curious about this, because this is a new term for me.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah, so this has been a new hot topic in HR, and not that anything's hot in HR, but so in the great world of diversity and inclusion, we've moved past race in this woke culture. I have to say, disclaimer, like this is the totally woke corporate America that you hear about.
You're putting quotes in quotes for those of you who are watching, not listening.
So diversity and inclusion is very hot. It's something corporations want to be on the right side.
Of course,
they want to be talking about it. And initially this was all about race, gender, sexual orientation, but now it's very clear that this has to have, or a lot of employees want this to have a much broader umbrella to include people who are on the autism spectrum, to include people who are ADHD, to include other neurological divergencies.
Yeah, neurodivergent.
You know, and so particularly in like IT departments, you have a lot of neurodivergent individuals. And so this is a topic near and dear to their hearts.
Yeah, no, that's actually a good summary of it. So that's interesting. That's interesting enough. Yeah. So I remember my first few jobs actually working in technology and data. I worked in tech support, right? Right. You wanted at first, like, because back then, you know, we're not even talking like a decade ago at this point, but you know, the perception was that, oh, we've got a bunch of introverts, right? Everyone's introvert versus
computer programmer personality.
Yeah. Yeah, but now I think as we are getting a little bit more aware of what's in the culture and that sort of thing, that we are seeing that actually there are expressions of neurodiversity work in a much different way, right? And I think that it's actually a good thing that we discuss these and celebrate these and in any sort of culture. Because again, at the end of the day, we're richer for the experience, I feel. But what's interesting about the movie Hackers in this way is that you have, because it's such a Hollywood film, they didn't show the quote unquote introverted smelly guy in the basement. They're out there rollerblading and they're out there going to parties and they're out there, you know, doing all this cool, having sex, doing all this other cool, like, if it wasn't Hackers, you would assume this is just like another 90s teenager coming of age film. Like all those party films that had happened. Like I remember when I was a teenager, like you had American Pie, You Can't Hardly Wait, you have all these other films that, you know, center around a group of friends coming of age in high school, right? And
now you're starting to predict the tech startup culture, where they would have these open offices, but there would be ping pong tables and comfy chairs and pinball machines and, you know, and beer brewing stations and all your full espresso bars and
all the stuff that Elon Musk sold on day two at Twitter.
Right, exactly. Yes, everything Elon Musk sold out on day two, like, is now gone from Twitter. All of that, yes, this is what that rollerblading hacker culture vision in this movie preceded.
Yeah, and the one thing that I picked up on this, and I had to watch this one a few times, right? And we had some time over our hiatus to think this one through. One thing that I think they unfortunately got right was a level, and we were talking about this before I hit record, and I should have been recording, was the misogyny that kind of came with it. So there's only really one female character in this. Well, I mean, like protagonist, right. And that was
female
Libby.
Yeah,
that was Libby, who was played by Angelina Jolie, and right. You know, overly sexualized, only character. And there's lots of references to, oh, she's a girl, or oh, you have to wear a dress, or things like that. Just like a lot of stereotypical crap. And I was watching this going, well, thank God we've advanced. But I'm like, but have we? Have we really? And the other thing is like, oh, well, it wasn't that. Yeah, it kind of was that bad
was that bad. And it's been an interesting area where, as a society, we actually regressed. Well, in the 80s and 90s, women were able to make great gains in most technical fields. They really fell behind in computer science, because what happened was that the family computer, for all the middle-class families that were buying a computer, they were giving them to their sons. And their sons were getting all the tech skills and the preparation to go into coding, to go into system engineering, IT architecture. But when the girls got into college, they just didn't have those basic skill sets. And it took colleges a long time to figure out how to rectify that social discrepancy. I think there's one other interesting, very negative area in this movie that still has impact today, and that's in the area of law enforcement. Law enforcement is still struggling to keep up with high-tech crime, like identity theft, you know, computer hacking, online stalking, you know, all of these areas of tech crimes, embezzlements that occur against senior citizens. You know, law enforcement is still really struggling to have the tools to be able to track down crime committed purely in a virtual space.
Yeah, and you think about in the world we're in today, where it's even harder now when you have such things like Bitcoin cryptocurrency, where you have untraceable currency that can use to fuel and fund these crimes, it makes it that much harder. My initial take on this film, like even just in hindsight, was, oh, it's not so kind, it's all exaggerated. But as you start peeling back the layers, and again, this movie, I don't think was ever intended to take itself that seriously. Let's be honest.
Yes, let's be clear.
Let's be clear. I'm not saying that this is a magnum opus of data culture in the 90s or something like that. Yeah. But what I am saying is that it does hit on a lot of very important themes. And, you know, the only people I can't really fault beyond the heavy-handed response is law enforcement in this. The lead law enforcement officer he's literally just trying to do his job.
Yeah.
And
law enforcement still does this today. If a company comes to them and says, this is the crime, and they put their experts in front of law enforcement's going to trust them. They're going to believe that they're telling the truth by default, because that's their only source of information.
Yeah, like I remember a couple years ago, actually about 5 years ago, my identity was stolen, and it was stolen.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was stolen. Somebody got a piece of information. I won't go off on my rant there, but they managed to sign me up for credit monitoring. When they signed me up for credit monitoring, they managed to get all the rest of my information and start doing so. I had to call law enforcement because I had to file a police report. They took the information and said, best of luck to you. That's pretty much it. That's pretty much it, because that's all their resource for. So in you're talking to the average cop who's dealing with, like, you know, you're dealing with the same police force in most cases, especially when you talk about municipalities that are dealing with murder, arson, carjacking, theft, all these other things that are actually really harmful. So a lot of these cyber crimes, like, they're not going to take the resources and time to train all their officers in the nuances of cyber crime.
Right. Yeah. No, that's definitely a subject for another episode.
Yeah, I think we've got several planned. All right. Yeah. So I think with that, I think we're getting to a point where we're ready to give this our patent pending, trademark pending in some kind.
So excited. It's been too long.
Too long. Yes. Yeah, so we're going to give
Turing score.
Yeah. So for those of you who don't know, our Turing score is our score 1 out of 5. How realistic do we rate this movie? Now, this is completely subjectively objective. And this is basically based off of our feeling on this. So I'll go first with my feeling. So let's start with The Good in Hackers. Hackers really did touch on a lot of cultural touchstones and also did an excellent job portraying things like social engineering, DDoS attacks, talked a lot about the corporate culture. But there's also some bad in there too, like the hackers, like every the hackers are all good and we just want information, we just want to be free, while completely ignoring sort of the seedy underbelly that's fueling hacking, including cybercrime today. Given the mixed bag I'm putting this in, yet still one of my favorite movies, I'm giving this 3 out of 5 Turings.
This is like one of my great guilty pleasure movies. I loved it as a teenager growing up, as many boys my age did. It's this mixed bag of ideas. Some are really good, others just totally ridiculous. Compared to War Games, however, it really, in my view, comes up short of a betrayal of the early internet and hacking techniques. However, the way the FBI were involved in a kind of somewhat bumbling manner, being led around by the security experts who were really the crooks, was very realistic. And this all takes place in an age where reading a single book could land you a high-paying job as a system administrator. There's a lot to this movie, good and bad. So, for once, Tim, you and I are in complete agreement. 3 out of 5 Turing.
Oh, nice. 3 out of... You heard it here first, folks. We're in agreement. This is an excellent start to our first season, or second season.
Second season.
All right. So...
Unless we're counting by Python, in which case it would be season 1.
That's right. We don't talk about season 0.
That's right.
Can we just call the season N+1?
Yes.
There we go.
I'm good with that.
Perfect. Well, folks, we're out
to season end, and they could always be season end.
Season end. Well, welcome to season end of Kill All Humans, Data, and Pop Culture. We hope you enjoyed the show. Make sure you continue to listen to us or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. That's Podbeans, iTunes, Spotify. Hey, we're all over the place. Share with your networks. Go on LinkedIn. Go on Facebook. We'll be there. Anyway, for Kill All Humans, I'm Tim.
And I'm Matthew.
And remember, trust in the utter fallibility of law enforcement dealing with high-tech crimes.
We're back. We're back.
Oh my God, I missed.
Hack the planet. Hack the planet.
Oh man, that's so much fun.
Yes.
Cool. So my plan is to get this bad boy. I've got a